Chandler, tell me about your caffeine addiction.
Honestly, it does sound like an addiction.
Oh, it is. I'm not even going to try to sugarcoat
it. Imagine how much money you could save if you didn't get Starbucks every day.
It's like cigarettes.
I don't get Starbucks
every day. It's like $5 a day.
No, I don't get Starbucks every day.
$5 a day times 365 days a year.
God
damn, that's a lot of money.
So one box of my coffee that I usually drink, it's 100 cups of coffee. Mm-hmm. It costs $30 for 100 cups of coffee.
That's like $300. No, I'm kidding.
How much is that? 50 cents coffee every day.
More like it's closer to
so it's $30 for 100 cups of coffee.
Yeah,
is 30 cents per cup of coffee per day.
So a fun fact is that if you ever don't want to do
per day
math,
I drink three a day.
You did? Oh, okay, so it's actually a dollar a day in coffee.
Yeah.
Imagine 360 extra dollars per year that you could not spend on coffee.
365
if you just drank water.
No, if you ever don't want to do math, a pro tip is be around people that really like correct statistics, and you just say a statistic, and they'll
That's
just
wrong.
Math check it for you.
Well, I have the computer in front of me. I have a calculator right here, like the world's most powerful.
What is it? One of the rules of the internet is if you want to get the correct answer, you just say the wrong answer, and then someone will correct you.
Yeah, you it's don't like want to do the math. Absolutely.
What you do in Stack Overflow, if you actually want the answer, you don't post a question. You post a question, and then on an alt account, you answer it wrong.
Yep.
No,
you'll get the answer.
You post a question, then you get called an idiot duplicate, and then they show you the correct one, which is usually not the correct one.
Yeah,
correct.
That's
so
why
you just close it out and do it again.
Yep. Yeah.
Until you get the right results that you're looking for.
I actually hate Stack Overflow. Controversial take.
Hot take.
I don't like Stack Overflow.
Yeah. Why?
And not because of it's the concept. I think the concept of Stack Overflow is beautiful. I think the execution is poor.
Tell me more.
Because of the toxic community that's like been built up.
Stack Overflow is a front page you've never seen.
Yes, it does. I know. I made a Stack Overflow account and all that other stuff.
They do have a front page, yeah.
Yeah.
Which Stack Overflow has a bunch of communities behind it, which apparently, you know what their primary way to make money is? They sell their, like, they sell Stack Overflow as a service where your company can have its own instance, private instance of Stack Overflow.
I saw that. It was like Stack Overflow teams.
Yeah.
It seemed pretty cool, actually, because you could, like, whenever you have common questions, you can, like, store it in your team.
Yeah, we just use GitHub Discussions, which are the exact same thing, but included in our GitHub subscription.
But other people won't randomly come and answer your questions. You have to, like, only put your stuff there once you find it.
No, you can ask questions there and then just have people... like answer it. It's literally just a Stack Overflow clone, but it's all on GitHub.
I was on Stack Overflow the other day, and I almost always only read the questions, but I was a little bit bored at work, and I was like, what are even these things on the side that's trying to show me? And it shows you a ton of other related questions and then just random questions. And I didn't realize for Stack Overflow, there's a ton of other random pages that it links to not related to programming also.
Yeah, they have they have like a mathematics page.
Yeah,
they have like
writing page. Engineering and circuitry page.
They
I
have
think.
Like a specific Ubuntu and Linux page.
Do they really?
There's one about like bicycles. I was like,
wait, there's a bicycles page?
Yeah, they have a world building one that's all about like building up like writing characters for a book.
Oh my God, I think I have actually never seen this front page.
Yeah, it's all good.
For April Fool's, Stack Overflow made their UI look like Windows 95.
Oh, that's good.
That's awesome. For what, dude? One Stack Overflow April Fool's Day was legendary.
Which one was it?
They sold on their website a Stack Overflow copy and paste button. It was a little mini keyboard that only had three keys.
We could easily make one.
It was legendary.
Was it actually a physical device?
Physical device ended up shipping them, yeah.
Should I talk about my meme project idea?
What's your meme project idea?
All right, so rotary encoders, right?
Oh,
I love them. They're cool. They've got click buttons and they spin and they feel... nice. So your numpad, right?
Oh, yes. The
one
on your right hand side.
Numpad's regular push buttons. But what if every button on your numpad also turned?
You need two rotary encoders at most.
We create an entire numpad of rotary encoders. Or just like a,
just
a
zero through nine.
A 3x3, whatever, like macro.
Or just
pad,
1 through 9.
Or even like a standard phone, right?
Needs to be
1 through 9
numpad.
Star and pound.
Yeah.
All 12 of them are rotary encoders, so you can click the button for the corresponding number, or you can spin the dial to do something else entirely. No idea what that could be.
So if I take my 6 and I rotate 180 degrees and I click it, will be a 9?
You could probably make that work, and it is a hilarious idea. Speaking of which, Kyle, I need two of your Fire Beetle boards, those ESP32
boards. Oh, yeah, sure. Yeah, I got them.
Because I got rotary encoders at home now, so the next video that I'm going to make here is... Well, we shouldn't leak it, but project. Well, I'll give it. We'll give it a project code name right now. Project Etch a Sketch.
I love it.
It's going to involve two rotary
encoders. Pretty sure that gives away everything that I'm doing.
That's okay.
But I love codename Etch-A-Sketch. So that's going to be the next project.
Have I mentioned that I think this is one of the dumbest ideas you've had, but I totally think we should do a video
about it. No, it's the greatest idea. It is the future of computing. All right, listen here.
If we want to talk about the future of computing, and in addition to your rotary encoders, you just put a little OLED display on top of every single one.
Yeah, and the smart knob view.
Oh, no. Okay, this is Kyle's other idea, which I think we should do. Just take Ian's keyboard, and then instead you put an OLED screen on every single key, and underneath the OLED screen is a standard mechanical key.
I mean, hey, we've got a company that uses tiny OLEDs. They're in our DMs.
Oh God,
really?
Yeah,
I didn't know that actually.
Well, no,
you got one of their products in your car right now.
Oh, bet.
Yeah, they have all their screens are OLEDs,
and they're tiny little things.
Tiny, like literally,
like the size of a thumbnail. Yeah. Probably. Yeah.
Oh, perfect.
Just get 100.
There we go.
Get 128 of those.
Yeah.
128 of those.
Just get a bunch of ribbon.
By the way,
ribbon cables.
We'll leak Project 128cc here as well. I think that's sort of the code name, 128cc.
By the time this podcast comes out, you might have the video done.
We'll see.
Probably not.
We gave them until September or longer or even later. So,
RIP.
Anyway,
they have to listen to our schedule again.
Speaking of new projects, Ian, you said you want to build a new computer.
Yes, I do want to build a new computer. Let me finish with the keyboard though.
Oh boy.
Don't make a custom keyboard that uses a funky layout. Reached out to a company. Basically, it's impossible to find backlit F13 through F24 plus a handful of symbol keys for the Cherry MX profile. I'm going to have to make the keys myself. I'm going to have to resin.
Wait, why? They're different parts.
Why?
Yeah, they're different parts. Just the backlit mechanical switch part is separate from the keycap.
No, he's talking about the keycap doesn't have any transparent part.
The keycaps themselves, no one makes a backlit like F13 through F24 set because no one has any demand for it. No one wants them.
Oh, just get an F1 through 12 and then just like draw one in the front of each one. With
that's
nail polish.
Awful.
That's awful. That's I awful. Wanted backlit caps.
Okay.
So I reached out to a company that does backlit caps, right?
Mm-hmm.
I wanted two sets of 20 caps for a total of 40, right? Because I'm making two keyboards, one for home
caps.
And one for work. And I was quoted $130. Not full keycap sets, but 40 caps. Just F13 through F24 and a couple of simple keys.
I know someone who paid $40 for a single escape keycap.
And that is...
Your argument is that is not that expensive? Are you
no,
serious?
No, my argument is that it's an expensive hobby, period.
It's an expensive hobby, but I'm a cheap bastard, so...
So are you going to source it from somewhere else, or are you going to bite the bullet?
I'm going to resin print keys.
Oh.
Rattle can them black and see if I can laser engrave them or go to the local public library and use a vinyl cutter to vinyl cut stickers for the legends,
yes.
Stick them onto the keys and then rattle can them so that I'll have backlit keycaps.
Do you have white resin?
I do have transparent resin. Yeah. Yes. For less than, you know, the cost of the entire order of PCBs, like the custom PCBs.
I've heard people say
cost
that
less than the keycaps,
3D printing your keycaps is not a good idea, but after seeing the detail on your resin printer, I don't know why not.
They said it's bad to do FFF printing.
It's a terrible idea either way, because they're going to be bad keycaps. But
why?
It's F13 through F24. They're my dedicated macro key rows. That
if you're
going to
vinyl them anyways, why don't you just vinyl F1 through 12?
Because I already have
Do you really
want
to resin print an entire keycap set, Kyle?
No. I'm saying the opposite. Why doesn't he buy two copies of the normal F row and then just vinyl them?
Because they're double shot PBT keycaps. They're manufactured by taking your inner color, which is like a translucent white, basically.
Yeah.
And you create an inner mold that has your number extruded out to the top and your general stem stuff. And then you take that key and you shoot black plastic on top of that. So then you have just the legend coming through the keycap. And then the rest is a black keycap. Like, that's impossible to change. Like, there's already molds for that. You can't really make a new mold without investing a ton of money, really. Which is why they cost $130 for...
Right, but I guess that's why I was just saying that if you put the vinyl in front of it, it won't be as good as the old ones. It'll be just as good as the ones you'll make yourself.
I want backlit keycaps, though. So putting vinyl in is never going to be backlit.
Yeah. But then you say you're going to go to the library and use their vinyl on your backlit.
No, he's going to use the vinyl as a stencil and he's going to spray paint them black.
Yeah, I was just going to create blank, like translucent keycaps, right?
I gotcha.
And then just rattle can them black. It'll be functional. It's not going to look good. But I don't know. I think
it'll look fine if you use matte paint.
I think it'll look fine. I've also just got a set of fully blank keycaps, which I paid way too much money for. But whatever, it gives me the ability to just
honestly, I thought about
blank,
it.
Just fully blank keycaps on the top there.
So for my keyboard, I am probably like next paycheck, I'm gonna buy some blue key switches because I have browns right now, but I have a hot swap keyboard. And honestly, I kind of miss my blues. I'm with you, Kyle. I think the low profile blues are my new favorite switch.
They are so gold.
Yeah. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to buy a set of low-profile blue switches, which you can get two-day shipping on Amazon.
How much? What?
They're $40.
How many?
For $95.
Yeah, I saw that, that's and I was like, I kind of want to buy these right now. I'm not going to lie. Yeah, not going to cap.
What?
Not going to cap.
Yeah, well, I'm going to get the key switches, and then I'm going to bit the switch lube, and I'm going to lube each switch, and then I'm going to put them into my keyboard. Oh,
but do you need the RGB versions?
No.
Aha.
So my keyboard.
Oh, you're right. They probably aren't RGB.
No, my keyboard has RGB lighting in it, but they're not per keycap. It's per zone.
But
the per key is so cool. You can click a key and then you see it go across the key.
I used to use a white keyboard with no RGB on it.
I mean, it's also true. I have an RGB keyboard, it stays red.
Yeah, I'm anti-RGB. I don't like RGB in all my stuff.
I love RGB.
I don't like rainbow throw up all over everything.
Yeah.
It's not on my computers.
Speaking of which, neither do I. I don't like rainbow throw up on my computers either because it's...
Dude, I can't stand it. What was it? It was the NZXT H510 Elite. It came with an RGB strip. I left it white. I didn't change my RGB strip color ever.
Mine alternates between purple and green, and then there are sparkles of other colors. And then
it's your keyboard?
Yeah, and then in addition, whenever you click...
ridiculous.
And then whenever you click a key from there, it expands out also on every single key press too. It's so cool.
That is a very gimmicky keyboard.
It's awesome.
No, it's not my style.
Not only that, but one of the coolest features about this keyboard that I saw was I was playing Terraria. And Terraria had an extension with the color key manager I was doing, and it automatically isolated WASD. H, which is like your health potion in the game, was red. And then when you used it, there's like a 15-second cooldown, and then it would go like the rest of the normal keyboard color. And then when it came back, it would go back to red. So like
your hook in for
for the game itself.
Games.
Well,
and
yeah,
like you'd go into like a blue biome area, and the entire keyboard would just turn blue, and you go into like underground red. Like a super lava filled area, and then tech keeper turn red. So cool.
Yeah.
I interrupted you, Chandler. What are you going to say?
Oh, well, with his keyboard, we were going to set it up so it like flashbangs you when you get flashbanged.
Well, we can't leak everything about the keyboard.
Oh, sorry.
So it's possible.
Well, no, have you guys seen those videos though where someone like took Counter-Strike and they made it so when they shot in the game, their desk vibrated and their monitor got shaken apart. So
oh, what's the name of that guy that did that? I forget his name.
Was it Clix Philip?
No.
Yeah, I think it was. It's the guy who did the underground thing of his house.
Colin Furze?
No, that's Colin
Furze.
Colin Furze did one.
I don't think that he did any video game related. Well, maybe.
No, I thought
he was sponsored once and he did it. He made it so that way, like, when he got, like, splashed in a video game, it, like, sprayed him with water, and then another one where it, like,
video.
Did fire.
I'll have to find the video.
Okay. It was cool.
Yeah,
though.
But I try to avoid RGB and all my stuff. That's why I actually, even though Apple does a lot of things I don't like, I actually really like the industrial design like style they use. I just wish it wasn't only available in stainless or a slightly darker color.
Yeah, did you see the new black they have for the one?
Yeah, I really hope the new Pro comes in black.
It better.
I'm going to be upset if it doesn't.
Yeah, I'll buy it if it does.
You'll buy it. You will buy a new MacBook Pro if they make it in black.
Well, the new MacBook...
You heard it here first, Tim Apple.
All right, then.
I'm honestly under.
Well, I want that MacBook Pro you have. It's so beautiful.
It is so nice, but it's
like twice as powerful.
I'll give them that. They make a pretty product.
Yeah, I like
pretty and very functional product that has crazy battery life. Like it has lots of actual features.
Their battery life is impressive.
But it's also because it's running ARM, and they can shut off cores that you're not using.
Yeah, the only thing that really sucks about it is the dumb audio features that they have.
Like, that's my biggest
Bluetooth
complaint.
No, often.
I have so many issues with Bluetooth on that.
They have issues with
the audio? I do. I have Bluetooth issues all the time. So my biggest issue that I have with it is that, because I use Bluetooth, I'll admit, I don't
Ian uses wired, so he wouldn't
Okay, you wouldn't notice.
Wiremaster Race. Yeah.
You wouldn't notice. But so I have these same pair of headphones that Kyle is wearing right now has Bluetooth support. So I use the Bluetooth when I'm connected
to WH-1000XM4.
Yeah, those.
From Sony.
Yeah. So what I do is that I'll Bluetooth into my MacBook, mm-hmm. and I'll listen to music while I'm coding, and then I'll get like a call from my boss. And I want to keep my music running while I'm in a phone call with my boss, like quietly in the background. No, mm-hmm. it puts it in phone call mode. Audio quality just gets butchered. Just
tanks.
Just gets complete. So now it's like 8,000 kilobits per second.
I think it's because awfulness. It's switching as well to like bidirectional instead of unidirectional too. So there's an
immediate bit rate
drop there, which you'll notice.
Yeah. You say that, but on every other device, they work perfectly.
Yeah.
On your phone, it works great. On your laptop, it works. On your Windows laptop, it works great.
Yeah.
On your desktop, it works great. Well, on your Steam Deck, it works great.
I use them wired on my desktop.
Okay.
So I don't use them wireless on my desktop.
I mean, I guess you can use them wired on your laptop, but that really sucks in my opinion.
Well, no, because my idea is that I can just tote the headphones around in my backpack with my MacBook, and when I go to Starbucks, I put the laptop down, put the headphones on, I'm good. I don't have to do anything else.
Yeah.
When I go to Starbucks, oh boy.
My new favorite pair of headphones is these new Steel Series headphones I got. They are fantastic, actually, because unlike the Sony headphones, which are really in many ways, you have to charge the Sony headphones if you want to use them wirelessly. But with these SteelSeries, they have a battery pack that you can pop out, and it comes with a second base that you charge a secondary battery, and you just switch the battery from the base into the headphones and from the headphones into the base whenever you're done. So your charge time is effectively 5 seconds.
Whoa, a removable battery?
Yeah.
Oh,
that
my
lasts
God.
30 hours and charges with USB-C
this
as well.
Is a brand new idea. It's almost like we've never seen this before, and like it would be a wonderful, amazing product feature to just be able to remove an old dead battery and put a new one in. Oh my God. It's like a revelation.
We got him on a soapbox again.
I'm sorry. Batteries are consumables.
No, right.
End of story.
You're right. They should be swappable.
And this headphone is, and it has all the other normal like quality of life features. Normally, for whatever reason, like the swappable backplane phones, no company decided to try to keep that feature and add the new features. Like it was like,
yeah,
one or other for whatever reason. I don't know why they didn't include both. I guess one of the things is like, it's way harder to do waterproof, you know? So these new headphones, I would bet, are not waterproof, but I only keep them indoors.
Why would you need waterproof headphones?
You don't go in crazy, like during your exercises where you're sweating like 10 gallons per second.
No.
While underwater.
Well, they have wireless earbuds that are like 67 rated.
Cheap pair of $5 Walmart wired earbuds.
But I want
for
fantastic audio quality while I work out, Ian, you know? That's why I listen to most of my music. Says Devil's Advocate.
I don't know what to tell you. I don't like get good. No.
That's what I want. I want the product to get good.
I don't know. Anyway, computer stuff. I have a very important question for the two of you. I already asked Brendan this question the other evening.
However,
new desktop build is going to happen, confirmed for me. There is
that
no
is exciting.
Stopping this at this point.
What are your predicted specs?
My predicted specs at minimum 4080, possibly a 4080 Ti.
So you're going to wait until
I will not compromise to go any lower than a 4080.
So
like February?
Yeah, well, yeah, no, they rumor that the 4080s are going to be coming out, like, in October is the new
when
rumor.
When those?
No, 4090.
4090 is October?
Yeah, they always release 90, 80, 70.
Yep. When they drop, we'll see how it goes, depending on some stuff that I won't mention.
You could just get a 3090 Ti.
I'm not
going
to do
cheap.
That.
Those are really cheap right now. They're, like, $1,100.
Yeah, but the 4080 is supposed to rival the 40 or the 30, like the 3070, I think, is supposed to rival the 3090.
In the 4070?
The 4070 is supposed to rival the 3090.
I think NVIDIA is still.
I definitely think that's not true.
No,
we will
I think NVIDIA
see
too.
How it goes. So that sort of brings in the next question. I am considering going one of the top end Zen 7000, Zen 4.
So you're gonna wait because AMD is supposed to be releasing those like very soon. Those
but
are
how does that compare? Because you got that 5950X for $350, right, at Micro Center?
5900X was $350. I ended up going for the 5950X for an additional $150.
Okay, so never mind
for the extra cores because it was a server PC.
So it would have been the full 500.
It was not. They were not. It was not a $500 CPU, and it was new.
Yeah, that's like an $850 CPU.
Yeah, I know. It's like an $850, but yeah, they're $500 now.
Which is still insanely cheap for that.
How does that compare to me blowing the full like $900 probably on one of the top end 7,000 series CPUs.
Because they haven't had performance metrics leak yet, so I don't know how much of the performance improvement's actually going
to
be there.
But I would guess 20%.
I suppose I'll have to see.
Is 20% worth an extra $400 to you?
It's also upgradability, though.
That's true. Because right? the new because platform if, they're going to support
if I go on the 5950X...
You're done. That's it's the it. End of the line.
End of the line. There is
that
no...
That is literally the top end CPU for that platform.
CPU that I can go to. I've never had the option of upgradability. Laptops...
And then your previous system you said was like end of the line for that generation too.
It was AMD FX.
Yeah, so it was end of the line
for that
generation.
What are you going to do? Upgrade to the slightly higher tier FX CPU? Yeah. And the FX CPUs weren't that great anyways.
My first PC was FX. It was pretty bad.
And even prior to that, it was another laptop. So I've never had an upgradability path as an option. Well, I'm not sure it's something that I'm going to use, but there is that early adopter tax of DDR5, which is currently rather
butchered
inflated.
In RAM.
The $950 or whatever it's going to be for the top end AMD CPU. Because at this point, we're creators. I do a lot of CAD work at this point.
I need a powerhouse
of a machine because, I don't know, video editing, encoding, processing, rendering, streaming and recording content on a machine. Like I need
my Mac can do all of this. Sorry, I had to play devil's advocate.
I know that you're going to play advocate, and technically I could throw Linux
your
on
Mac
a Mac.
Won't be able to do it. His PC will be able to do though.
Yeah, there's a few things my Mac would definitely. My Mac can do CAD. It's not good at CAD. So my next thing is though I've always had, with the exception of my first two PCs didn't really have an upgrade path. Mm-hmm. So I had, because Intel is really bad about upgrade paths.
Yeah. Every 2 years, whatever, they switch sockets.
But I did, at some point, I did have an AMD system, and I could have, my options were, this is middle of the pandemic, my options were either, I could go and upgrade my CPU to a 3950X at the time, because the 5950X wasn't out.
Yep.
Or I could go and I could buy an Intel system and a new, like an Intel CPU and a new chip and everything else, and I'd need a new motherboard and everything.
Yeah.
And I was given the two options, and I upgraded to an Intel chip. I actually got rid of my Ryzen 5 chip because I was on the platform with upgradability and I still didn't use it. So there's a good chance that you're going to end up spending this extra money and you're never going to utilize the potential upgradability because you could say, all right, Intel blew AMD out of the water this year. It would be more worth it for me to just buy a new chip, buy a new motherboard. I think that's a strong possibility.
At least there is the value add of being able to sell that hardware secondhand, but it's just a hassle. It's a pain.
Dude, I can't, I don't usually sell my hardware. I usually keep it.
I would probably sell it. Like, I don't know, maybe I could turn it into a server.
That's what I did.
At this point, we have enough servers floating around this group.
Yeah, we have two. We have two servers and one of them is very underutilized because it's off right now and that's mine.
Yeah, right. So what's the point of me saving, you know, a couple, almost $1,000 or more in hardware? But I don't know. I'm also, you know me, I don't spend money. I try to spend as little as I can and just save it all and whatever. So I could see myself maybe like, oh, I could extend my computer another 5 years, whatever. Get to the end of the line for AM5 at this point.
It's gonna
be cold. Then just swap in the highest end AM5 socket all the way down the line. But I don't know if they'll continue to support whatever the B5 or the B750. Whatever.
I don't know what they're
calling
these.
I don't know exactly.
I honestly haven't been keeping up that much with this hardware generation.
I haven't kept up for a while.
Yeah,
I really got to start jumping back in on that.
Well, it's weird because the less gaming I did, the less I really cared about like getting new hardware. And even then, when I did get new hardware, you know what hardware I got?
Steam Deck, yeah.
This thing. It does everything I needed to.
I think that's also sort of true. I just need new hardware because I need the, you know, I need the performance for the workload that I'm now doing.
Ian does need new. Out of the entire group, well, him and Alex both need new hardware really bad.
Alex probably needs new hardware more than I do.
No,
I disagree.
I disagree. Really? I think you need it more.
I need it more than
Alex
he does.
Yeah,
because I don't know what Alex.
Alex
has
only
this time.
So Alex.
I only plays games with Chandler sometimes. That's all he uses PC for, to my knowledge.
Yeah, that's all he uses it for.
Yeah, that's fair. Yeah,
so
he
said that
H.265 is just not an option as an encoding scheme laptop for me on this computer.
Well, yeah. I've been doing a lot of live streaming, which I haven't the past like 2 weeks, and the main reason why is just because I've been playing the Steam.
You did a little last week.
I did a little last week. I'm playing on streaming tonight, which I've only like the only game I stream is Apex Legends, which I'm shit at. But I'm gonna be playing Apex tonight, and I'm doing live streaming and stuff. And yeah, my upload speed's not great, But here's the thing. Apparently, the new Intel graphics cards, which that's the other thing, too, is that, yeah, you want the 4080 or whatever, which I think for what you do is exactly what you want. But the video encoder on the new Intel chips, the new Intel GPUs, is apparently their killer feature. That's going to be the thing that, like, people buy them for is the video encoder.
Put one of them in our server.
Yeah, put one of them in our server. Services. Just use it as a video encoder for nothing else.
We'll find out. Yeah. I don't know.
Yeah.
So what was your question? Are you like debating between the two or?
I don't know. What are your opinions? What are your thoughts? Is it worth it to spend the upfront, like additional upfront money for DDR5 and 7000 series AMD chips?
Well,
or is it better to just stick at the end of the line and then fully upgrade all of that stuff later when all that technology is more mature?
So I'm under the opinion that...
While I can get the deals now.
Early adopter, while normally I am a very tech, like, oh my gosh, I have to have the latest thing now. There are a lot of instances where I say, especially if you're a more conservative buyer like you are who doesn't like spending a whole lot of money, I would definitely say spring for the older generation of hardware because the improvements from what you're going to have now is going to be so much that that 20% difference isn't going to make that much of a difference to you in the end. You're going to end up saving more than just the $400 on the CPU. You're also going to save on the motherboard. You're going to be able to save on the RAM because you're going to be able to go with DDR4, which frankly, DDR5 is fucking not that good right now.
DDR5
is marginally better than DDR4 right now because it's such early. Better. In 3 years, I will not say that. In 3 years, it will be improved enough that it will make a difference.
That's exactly what's factoring in on my mind. Yeah, like, I don't know. There isn't really a huge difference between DDR5 and DDR4, so why
you're
going to
end up saving a couple hundred bucks. You're going to save more than a couple hundred bucks. You're going to probably save $100 to $150 on the motherboard. You're going to save $400 on the CPU. You're going to save another $100, $150 on the system, the CPU itself. And then the graphics card, you already said you're getting a 4080 or bust. So that's fine. That's going to be PCIe 4.0, which is current generation supports anyway.
The only thing that Brendan mentioned as well is that you want to try to avoid bottlenecking that 4080 as much as possible.
I don't think a 5950X will be a bottleneck for a 4080. I think
it very well might be.
It will not be as long as you don't SLI them.
Mm. Well,
as long as you put it in
cards.
The top slot so it gets all four PCIe lanes.
Four lanes.
Yeah, I think it'll be fine. I think Brendan is being a bit too conservative with that opinion. I think it'll be fine. I think it'll plus like again, you don't play that many games.
No, it's all workload.
It's gonna be a CAD device.
So it'd be better.
It's gonna be CAD and encoding.
It would be better to have all of the cores than even slightly go with a lower end.
It'd be better to go with like a 4070 and go with like more cores. If you, I know you said this is like an unlimited budget, like go crazy PC ish. But
within reason, I'm not going to blow 15 grand on a computer.
You're not going to go full server hardware specs.
No, I would love to, but we.
But
I don't have a reason.
You don't play
for
games.
I don't play games all that often.
That's also the reason why I'm saying I think a 3090 would be fine.
Oh, I'm sure it would be fine.
I think that it would do just
but
fine.
I don't know. I also see I could spend the money and wait, I don't know, a little bit extra and get the 4080 and it's X percent better than the 3090, which is going to contribute to X percent longer usable lifetime of the device. When I buy a computer or an electronic device, I want it to last 5 years. That is sort of my time
scale. Is that
scale.
How old that laptop is?
Almost 5 years at this point.
I agree with that mentality for those who are not into technology and or don't use their technology to make money. If you use your technology to make money, then you should optimize for your time.
Steve literally told me that he will buy me the new MacBook if it's better, if it's X percent better than my
current one. And I'm still in the mentality that I don't make money off of my technology.
That's true, but that might change. That might change.
It might change, but what is the possibility or plausibility of that? Maybe it holds me back.
I
mean, sure, like I say, I've got to take more risks in my life.
I'm going to argue it's higher than you think, and I think you should consider it more. I'm with Kyle. I think you should consider it more because you will be making... Because not only will you be... I know for work, you're given a work laptop, which is also why I'm under the opinion that any company should give their employees the best hardware or the not... Should never give their employees good enough hardware.
I had an Intel i7 7th gen CPU.
Yeah. I think it's unacceptable.
It had...
That's what I had as
four
well.
Four threads.
Think about how much money you spend in waiting and take that amount of time and multiply it by... the amount of money you make, and that's how much they're paying every single time that you have to wait. That money very quickly elapses the cost of the new hardware after you do like 2 weeks worth of work.
Oh, I guarantee my MacBook. Yeah. Steve's already got his money worth out of me, him buying me that MacBook.
Yeah. Like, it's just in the company's best interest to make money to get you the best hardware.
Yep.
It's when true. When you use the hardware it's to
just,
make the money.
It's just hard for me to look at a computer and say, oh, $5,000. Wow. Yep. Let's just do that. Because it's a significant amount of money to me still.
That's fair.
That is a significant amount of money. $5,000, even with our incomes, is still a chunk of our income, especially Chunker. For a computer. But either even then, it's still, it's, it is. And
but I also intend it to last a long time. That includes two 1440p monitors and
Haley memes about how, like, she saw this tweet about some girl. Yeah. Guys will spend $4,000 on a computer and then like another $1,000 on a chair because they're going to be using it for 50% of their life, but then they'll cheap out. They'll still wear a t-shirt that's too small that they got at a startup 5 years ago.
That's absolutely true.
Yeah.
And I've still got a couple of new t-shirts in my closet because I'm like, oh, I've got other good ones. I don't need to use that. I'll just like pull the tags off it and cut the tags off when the other ones get all ratty and I need a new shirt.
Yeah, I definitely am guilty of that because I'm like, I'm going to use this computer every day. I want to spend a lot of money on it.
It's even with the keyboards too. Like, I'm going to be typing on a keyboard for the rest of my life. I want a nice keyboard. And everyone else is like, oh my God, why would you spend more than $25 on a keyboard? And I'm like, I'm going to be typing on this for the next 50 years.
Yeah, that's why Haley thinks I'm nuts for spending. So she's like, your laptop has a keyboard, use that. And I'm like, no, that's not good enough. That's why I was thinking about getting like an ortholinear, like, nice keyboard that your hands are spread apart.
Yeah, I want one of those so bad. That has the blue thin profile.
Yeah.
If it was ortholinear, low profile blue.
Well, Kyle, it sounds like you've got a new project.
Yeah.
Dude,
yeah.
Honestly,
there's two more things though. It needs to be wireless enabled and USB-C charging.
This exists.
I'm pretty sure that we could make that.
We could
ourselves.
Build that pretty easily.
Yeah. The problem I saw was I tried looking at what microcontroller to use.
ESP8266 with Bluetooth. ESP32.
ESP32 is probably not going to work. ESP32 cannot be a HID yet unless the S2 has support for that at this time.
Yeah,
however,
I looked into it.
Conveniently, I've just recently integrated the ESP32 S2 into a development board. If I can get this board off the ground and to turn on, it will most likely become the new Casual Coder's embedded reference design. I will create a KiCad reference design that you can just plop into a model, and it will place an SoC with all of its related like filter capacitors, a wireless antenna, just everything that you need to just immediately plop down a Wi-Fi-based SoC and then just route it out to any of your other stuff.
And I have a keyboard design, which is open source, which has all the KiCad files in it that we could use as a base and then just modify that design to use our internal microcontroller so we can make sure everything works correctly.
Yeah.
Which is an ortholinear, low-profile Switch keyboard.
That is one of my dream keyboards. The other dream keyboard I have is a really unconventional one because one of my big gripes with modern keyboards is it's a joke to your most opposable thumb. Your most opposable finger.
Oh, then you don't need to use your thumb?
Yeah, your thumb is...
The most useful finger.
Your most useful finger is limited to a single key press, like the space bar. So instead, if you actually use the full range of motion, like of thumb and fingers, you'd end up with like probably a 45 degree weird keyboard.
Like sphere, like spheroid, semi-sphere sort of like shapes. Sort of. Yeah. Well, I mean, we could do that as a hand-wired keyboard. If we want to get into the weeds of like Casual Coders spends, I don't know, a couple months on keyboards, it probably wouldn't be that difficult. I'll have a lot of the hardware. I've got hot swap switches coming in, like 500 of them.
Does hot swap switches work with the low profile?
You probably. Can get my keyboard is low profile hot swap.
Yeah.
That's cool.
So we could just wire up some hot swap switches and glue them into little like 3D printed.
Yeah, like a Dactyl Manuform. I don't know if you've seen that or not.
I don't think I have.
Yeah, it's like, Linus did a video on it, I think.
I don't know.
It's like one of the types I was talking about.
But what I'm saying is I've got components. I've got stuff at this point now it's cheapest to order in groups of 500. And if there is a potential to possibly do a limited run of the 128cc, we'll have extra hardware lying around to be able to do something with that. So.
Yeah.
Well, I really like, so one of the keyboards that I considered buying is called the Moonlander, and it's an ortholinear split keyboard that on your thumb, it has five buttons on each thumb.
I think I've seen something like
that.
Yeah.
So Steve has one and he hates it.
Really?
Yeah. Oh,
you were talking about him giving you that keyboard.
He was talking
maybe?
About, yeah, letting us yeah. use it as like a reference design in our keyboard video for like if I'm in, build, doing an ortholinear keyboard video, mm-hmm. we could use it as a reference design.
What I really want also are six rows because you have four pointer fingers, right? And
regular keyboards have six rows, unless you mean six rows of letters.
Six columns. Sorry.
Six columns.
Yeah, in each hand okay. that's split.
And how many rows?
Enough. I guess I don't know, but specifically the columns matter to me because when your finger, with how your fingers lay, right? You have 1, 2, 3, 4, just tapping your pointer, middle, ring, and pinky finger. But then your pinky can go one over and your pointer can go one over. So six seems like the ideal amount of columns. Where most of those keyboards I see are like only five. They assume you're only going to move your pinky, which is very strange to me. So.
Yeah, I know that a lot of these ortholinear keyboards are like such strange designs. And the my big reason why I am very hesitant and why I haven't done this project yet is the hit to my initial hit to my productivity is what I'm worried about.
That's the reason I built entirely around a just bog standard ANSI 104.
Well, I was thinking about easing myself into it. So instead of going full bore ortholinear, step one is get used to using a split keyboard and just buy a bog standard keyboard that's just split straight down the middle and then use that for a few months. And then after those few months are up and after you're used to that, then try to switch to ortholinear. I think it would be a lot easier of a transition if you do that.
Ortholinear is all the keys in like a grid, right?
And so all the keys are in a perfect grid where you only move your fingers up and down. You never move your fingers left and right.
Yeah. Or if you do move them left and right, it's to like a whole new row because it's like a perfect grid.
Yeah.
Instead of staggered like the normal QWERTY is.
Which apparently is, apparently the staggered is like super, when you actually get down to the nitty gritty of it, it's staggered keyboard like that is actually super inefficient and it's there entirely because of tradition.
Yeah,
because typewriters needed the space between each key to.
Yeah, and we don't need that anymore.
There's a physical bar that went to the top.
Yeah, there's no physical devices anymore. It's there because of tradition.
I feel like it could be interesting to try once. If you
same with
one,
the keyboard layouts, people were talking about Dvorak and stuff like that, using those instead. I knew someone who used Dvorak, or was it Colmac or Dvorak?
I think
one of those.
I knew Dvorak. Person.
I think we were saying this once, and you were saying Colmac.
Colmac is a new one. That's
I know
coming
Dvorak
up.
Guy.
You know Dvorak guy? Mm-hmm. Is it the same person that I probably know?
Probably.
Yeah. But I remember my coworker was like, he was giving his computer to the new incoming co-op.
Oh.
And he's like, oh shit, it's still in Dvorak. I got to switch it back.
Oh, yes.
Which apparently he can, I don't know how he does it, but he can switch between QWERTY and Dvorak. You just have to tell him what the keyboard layout is and switches in his mind, he can use it.
Yeah, because you learn it eventually.
That's an awesome skill. I'm sure that takes a really long time to learn.
Well,
though.
I finally have just gotten to the point now, which it's taken me, how many months have I've had the MacBook for almost 3 months now, and I'm now at the point where I can switch between Windows and Mac shortcuts.
Hey, you got there.
Yeah.
After 6 months. Congratulations.
I finally am able to go from my Mac using the Mac shortcuts too, which I still occasionally get them mixed up, but not nearly as much as I used to.
Ooh, we should jump on the operating system.
I can
for
hear
it.
Your fan.
Yeah, I know it's bad.
Yeah, that's really
I need
bad.
A new computer. I think we've
I think
everybody knows this at this point, like anyone who's watched our podcast.
So you mentioned though that you mentioned to me previously that you wanted to like have it as a server PC like in your basement and then use another PC as your thin client.
You have a slightly incorrect misunderstanding.
I
want my tower to sit in my office space wherever that is.
Okay.
And I want two whatever 144 hertz
nice monitors,
two nice panels connected to it with all my peripherals, keyboard, mouse pad, headset, microphone, audio interface, all that good stuff on my desk, right? Just ready to be used, tapped into an Ethernet jack and probably also Wi-Fi for at least some redundancy.
Definitely make sure you get a motherboard with faster than gig Ethernet.
Faster than gig Ethernet?
Yes, I recommend faster than gig.
Because you get 2.5G pretty regularly.
2.5G is standard now pretty much on most high-end motherboards.
I'm sure I'll have 2.5G. I'm not sure it helps me much.
I might switch out my network that's in my office. I might switch it out to be 2.5G, so my server and my desktop have a 2.5G connection.
Yeah, I don't have like a NAS or anything, so it doesn't really have a big impact. And this server, if it does become anything, or this computer, is also going to sort of be NAS-like. I'll probably throw an extra like large drive there.
But
one of the 18 terabyte ones?
Just get a single 18 terabyte. That's terrible for data integrity.
It's bad. Data integrity is really weird though, because I'm thinking that what I'm gonna do is I'm gonna take two terabyte Samsung SSDs.
Okay.
And those are gonna be
like RAID 1 or 0.
RAID 0.
So you're gonna do the fast one.
Yeah, fast striped together one combined.
So there'll be terabyte. It'll be your one boot drive.
My one boot drive is two separate drives that are combined to make a full 4 terabyte drive, which then that full drive gets backed up to a 4 terabyte spinning disk as well.
Yeah, so my next desktop will have no hard drives in it. It will be all solid state.
I'm going to use the hard drives because they're cheap. I'm not going to buy four 2 terabyte hard drives just to back that up. I'm going to back it up to a spinning disk instead.
Well, so that's the thing. Difference, though, is that you don't want to have a NAS. I actually have a NAS. My NAS will have the spinning Rust in it, but my actual desktop PC where all my games load off of will just be all...
Yeah, this computer is probably also going to be NAS-like. If I can swing it.
And I guess that's where the operating system conversation comes into, where we mentioned that me and Kyle have been using Unraid quite a lot, and you can do GPU pass-through with Unraid really, really well, and it's really cool. And you're able to fully control, like, you're able to say, okay, I want to boot into... I want to boot into Windows now, and you're in the Windows, and the Windows will show up on the monitors. Mm-hmm. You'll be able to use your keyboard and mouse as if you were just native, but it's also running a NAS OS. So then from another, say your mom needs to back up a photo, she could still back up a photo to your NAS PC effectively, mm-hmm. but you're still using the computer normally. And you wouldn't, like, your mom wouldn't notice this. Obviously, you would probably have most of the cores allocated to that VM, but you would still leave, like, two cores left over so the NAS can keep running
in
the background. Call
it, like, one. Yeah, like, few as possible to just...
Theoretically, you could allocate all your cores to the one VM, and it will still manage it, and it will still run.
Could I allocate all cores to two VMs? Because I do...
Yeah, but there's no limitation on how many cores you can... So
Sort of want to become an Arch snob. I want to be that guy who
getting Arch running on Unraid is really easy. Yeah. I did it. Yeah, I did it.
He wants to drink the Kool-Aid.
But I'm not even sure. Yeah, I want to drink the Kool-Aid. I want to become the Kool-Aid man. I'm going to bust through your walls and tell you about Arch Linux.
Oh, yeah.
Arch Linux noises. No, but you mentioned, though,
if I want to do the whole Unraid thing.
Well, that way
know.
You can switch between, especially if you're going to have that much storage on your system. Like, you could easily switch between Windows and Arch Linux and just use Arch Linux for 90% of your stuff, and then for that few 1% of your time that you want a game, you can use Windows.
The problem is that I've run a dual boot system before, and this just turns into I always boot Windows.
But this isn't a dual boot system. This isn't a dual boot system because you're always running. It's always booted into Unraid. And then what you
it's technically still a dual boot system to my eyes.
Do you turn off your PC regularly?
Probably. This one?
Yeah, but your desktop PC, I mean, will you turn it off every day?
The goal is to leave it running all the time so that it can also run in thin client mode. So if I'm somewhere away from home, if I go on vacation or if I go...
You use Parsec. Go in.
No. Somewhere else, whatever. Out of the country, I take a business trip,
How are you thin client?
I have to go somewhere.
Probably.
And my plan
if
was
you use Arch Linux, just use SSH and VNC.
Get a thin client and run some open source secure VPN, tunnel into my home network, and then just, VNC. Yeah, VNC, OpenSSH.
Honestly,
or even Parsec is way better than VNC.
Windows RDP. I don't like Parsec's privacy policy.
They have the right to view everything that you've been doing. Just FYI. I'm okay with it because it's so convenient that I'm willing to sacrifice it.
Yeah, it's just
it.
Way better.
But I understand Ian's stance of not liking it.
Ian thinks that they'll steal our casual coders' videos and post it to their own channel.
Yeah, absolutely, obviously. But if I can find an open source alternative that has
trust me, especially if you're going to be doing Arch Linux, I have alternatives for you.
Like, yeah, you'll right, be exactly. Able to find you'll one. You'll we'll be it'll be just fine. I'm not going to have issues. I don't need whatever. I don't need it to be the most responsive thing, but I want to have all of the power of a 4080 and a 32 thread CPU on tap for hours at a time, right? Because if I'm running a thin client that's literally just connected to the local internet, tunnels out to my home machine, I can run super intensive CAD or super intensive video editing, whatever, just on battery, like a MacBook, right? Just on battery forever.
You should probably use a MacBook as your thin client.
You're probably
honestly,
not
that wrong. Is that's a good idea.
It's probably not a bad idea. Hell, my thin client could be a goddamn Steam Deck.
That's true.
Which would be really cool. Yeah. Here's my Steam Deck. It's got a bajillion, like, yeah, I don't know, frames per second.
So if you plan on doing all this remote stuff, honestly, I would lean towards just running Arch Linux.
That's sort of where I'm at.
But so NVIDIA enabled GPU virtualization on Linux. Mm. So what you could do is you could just run Arch Linux and then you could virtualize Windows in Arch Linux.
That's most likely what will happen.
And then you can do a full GPU pass through. There's one caveat. I don't know if the GPU encoder works when you do this. That's the one thing I'd be worried about.
I'm in the process of switching to DaVinci Resolve anyways.
So this would be your final push to switch to DaVinci.
Which would be the final push to switch to DaVinci. And possibly different CAD applications. I'm going
to
be...
Oh, dude, if I could learn how to use free CAD, I would use it.
I'm going to be hard-pressed to be leaving Autodesk Inventor if I have to.
I've been using OpenSCAD is the other one that I know really well.
I don't like OpenSCAD. I don't like to program my objects. I like a better GUI.
I'm very programmed, because I've been programming since I was like 9. I'm very program-driven, so OpenSCAD was perfect for me.
The problem with OpenSCAD is, like, let's say you want to do, like... You just decide offhand to like fillet 10 edges because you're like, oh, these 10 edges should be filleted. Okay, click, 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 click.
I found libraries that like help you do that stuff though.
Yeah, but you got to like think of the libraries, figure out the command, type it. Like it's just physically in time slower.
How long would it take you to import a step file of a custom keyboard into OpenSCAD?
Boom. It's possible. It's really hard.
Boom. I'm immediately unable to do a very significant number of casual coders projects.
That's
fair. You've lost the casual coders workflow.
I do think that free CAD would be our best option if we're going to switch to, which honestly, maybe that could be a casual coders video. You and I both try to switch to free CAD. Because I'm, like, you're super familiar with Inventor. I'm also on Autodesk. I am super familiar with Fusion. That's my preferred CAD software. So if you and I could both switch to FreeCAD, like, that
would
be the way.
It would generally help us out a lot.
Yeah,
because FreeCAD, we would just easily be able to swap models and whatever. And
tried switching to Blender.
No, because it doesn't do very good with parametric stuff.
I had the thought that I could switch to Blender for my video editing, but that's before I knew about DaVinci.
Yeah, Blender does have a full video editor in it.
It does. Yeah. I don't know if it's any good. I've heard
it's not horrible, is what I've heard it described as.
Yes, assuming that what you want to do is import models and have them dance around and stuff.
I thought it had a proper full-on video editor in it,
I think
though.
It does.
Yeah, but the video editor is just a camera that they put in the scene and hit record. Very similar to Unity.
It's like doing a 2D game in Unity.
Yeah, a 3D game in Unity with the camera.
Yeah.
Hmm. I don't know.
My experience.
Yeah, I think that
could be weird.
Yeah, so I'm with you. I do agree that I would rather switch to FreeCAD, which, I mean, like, yeah, Autodesk does have a Mac build for Fusion, but it sucks. And I don't like using it.
We'll see how it goes. It's possible that I might be able to... I'm not sure, like, Inventor even uses any form of GPU acceleration anyway, so if I just can pass off all of my cores through a Windows VM...
Fusion is worse. Fusion is literally everything that's cloud-based that it can do cloud-based, which I don't like. I really do. I think Fusion is a great piece of software. I think it's great that it's free for 90% of users, but I hate the fact that if I want to run a physics simulation, I have to do it in the cloud. If I want to make sure that my 3D print won't break whenever I actually do what I want to do with it, I would like to find an alternative.
Yeah.
That, and I agree with you, Ian. 90% of the time, the cloud saves are great, but there's that 10% of the time where I don't want to save on the cloud, and I'd rather just save it locally and upload it to a Git repo, which is what I do anyway.
Yeah. I want to save my object locally. I don't want to work with the cloud. What if the cloud is down? I still need access to my models and my objects.
Well, yeah, and then I use Git so much, and a step file is just text at the end of the day. So I could easily use Git with a step file.
I need step file processing through KiCad. I do a lot of that work where I can export a file. I can export a 3D model that I've made as a step file and import it into KiCad.
You know what the worst part about Fusions is, though? When you would send me a step file, okay, for us to work, which it also supported opening Inventor files, mm-hmm. which it did the same thing for Inventor files as well. You know how Fusion, you open files in Fusion?
It uploads it to
the
cloud.
It uploads it to the cloud, converts it, and then you can open it. That's dumb. I should be able to just fucking open it up. Because guess what?
Yeah, imagine
FreeCAD, you can just open up Inventor files. You can just open up step files locally, and nothing ever gets to the cloud. That's fucking stupid. You have the compute power. If you're doing CAD work, you probably have a pretty powerful computer.
Also, moving away from Autodesk Inventor would be pretty spicy because Autodesk Inventor is $2,500 a year.
Yeah, per year.
Per year. You can't buy it outright. You have to pay for it per year.
At least Fusion is like reasonable. I could justify the $600 a year for Fusion. That's still expensive, but I could at least justify it.
I don't know. That's still too much per year.
That's $600 a year? It's more justifiable compared to $2,000 a year, but it's not justifiable.
Well, I've also been on a student license for the past 4 years. So I've been getting away with not having
school.
Well, yeah, and you know what, a lot of companies are like, oh, just sign up with your student email and we'll give you a student license, and they don't care. Autodesk fucking asks for your transcripts.
Yeah.
They're terrible about
it. They used to not, actually.
Yeah, I know.
Until they realized 95% of their user base is in school. Weird.
Yeah, probably that.
I mean, of that percent, I don't know. But
no, but I really do want to switch to FreeCAD. But dude, so William Osmond was talking about this, and I think, you know what? Let's make a startup. Let's make a shitload of money, and then let's dump all of our money that we've earned back into making open source projects great. Let's just dump a bunch of money into FreeCAD so it can be as good as Fusion 360, but free.
Or even as good as SolidWorks or some other like really industry standard, like expensive software.
Yeah, that's the thing, is that, like, okay, SolidWorks is also nuts. I remember UA also, I think, teaches a SolidWorks class. I think they do. I don't remember if that's true.
It's true. The mechanical engineers take it.
Did the mechanical engineers take it?
Yeah,
probably.
Because I remember one of my friends took it as an elective.
Yeah, my friend took it as a requirement.
Oh, it's an elective, apparently. It's a gen ed elective. You can take it.
That's pretty cool.
Yeah, because my friend took it, who's a nurse.
Yeah, my friend took it as a mechanical engineer.
SolidWorks as a nurse?
As a nurse elective, yeah, for nursing.
It's an interesting thing. I don't know.
I thought that was weird.
It'd be useful if you've got 3D printers or something.
Yeah, she said, well, they mentioned that 3D printers and like 3D design is becoming a thing in medical now. Because, for sure. Yeah, so that's why they offer it as an elective for nursing and doctors now.
Makes sense.
So for medical, you can do it as an elective. So she did it, and apparently she was like, this is a really cool piece of software, and I thought about buying it so I could use it as a hobby. And then I saw the price, and I was like, never mind.
Yeah.
And like, SolidWorks isn't free. You can't get SolidWorks for free. It's nuts. No, we're not paying, what is it, $10,000 for a license? I think it's a lifetime license. It's like
probably
10 grand.
Yeah,
it's nuts.
I'm always upset by the monthly subscription or the yearly subscription models as well.
I want the ability
to buy a piece of software outright.
I hate it less than you do, but I hate people. I hate having like licenses like that where it's $10,000 and we don't care if you're an individual who does this as a hobby, you are fucked if you can't afford $10,000 a year. That's what I don't like. I understand you have to be super committed
and that's what your business does for all their money, you know?
It definitely makes it difficult. Yeah.
I think if SolidWorks, because I think Fusion's model is much more reasonable. The Fusion's model is if you make less than $100,000 a year or you're doing it as a hobby, like it's free. Yeah.
I think even sometimes the big companies won't even buy one for every single one of their engineers. They'll buy like 20.
One license.
Or a couple seats or something. Yeah, seats. And then all of them are on the server.
Yeah.
And they just sort of shift between whoever's using the software at any given time. Yep. Yeah.
Yeah,
Which is a good way to do it, at least.
Yeah, to get around their systems, you don't need it on every machine.
But
and all your engineers are all using SolidWorks.
But I think
some
of the companies actually officially support that. Like you purchase 5 seats, and they dynamically allocate between whichever person is using that license.
I think SolidWorks supports that because there's only a limited number of licenses that UA I think has with SolidWorks, and only the people who are taking the class can use it, which is stupid. Luckily, with the Autodesk, it's unlimited. So I had every Autodesk product for free for the duration of while I was in school, or I'm going to renew it again. It said it's expiring, and I'm going to renew it one more time because I have a transcript.
We're so lucky that like IDEs are so well developed and not.
Oh, dude, VS like, Code being free is amazing.
Yeah, could you imagine VS Code cost $10,000 to use?
Oh my god!
Everyone just still be using Vim.
Imagine email. Vim cost $500 per month per year to use.
I would learn Vim if I
imagine Vim costs $500 per year to use.
I don't think
I'm not sure. I could imagine that.
Here's the difference between software developers and mechanical engineers or people who use CAD software. Software developers, if there's not a good option, we can just make our own. But most mechanical engineers don't know how to program. That's the difference.
I don't know how I would even begin to make a CAD software.
Exactly.
I guess I do, but I've been doing a lot of research.
We'll make a new CAD software that uses Unity as a base.
Unity has its own CAD-like features behind it. It's actually, just like 3D points.
No, you could do that. You know, some crazy Chinese company used Unity for their 3D printer slicer.
That's hilarious.
Yeah, I think. Do you remember which company it was? I think it was FlashForge.
Oh, was it?
I think it was.
I don't know for sure, but yeah.
Because no, it wasn't. No. Linus did. It was that shitty $100 3D printer.
Wait, the $100 3D printer
that
Kickstarter
Linus did a video
where it was like
on?
Extruded plastic, like really bad.
Yeah, Linus did a video on it. Their official slicer used Unity. Someone made a Cura and a Prusa slicer profile for it.
Yeah.
Speaking of 3D printers, and speaking of CAD, I guess this is related to why me, a software developer, even uses CAD. Which is interesting.
Pretty sure that's fairly obvious.
Well, yeah. Well,
general hobbyist, like...
And casual coders, we're going to be using it quite frequently. And I already know a fair bit amount of...
Business expense, tax write-off. No, I don't know.
Tax write-off. Well, that's the one reason why I thought about buying Fusion 360 is just be a tax write-off. But
it feels like a lot of money just to burn, even if it is a tax write-off.
Anyway, I'm going to be buying a new 3D printer hopefully soon. When I say soon, I mean like I want to buy it next month. I don't want to wait. I want a new one. And... after looking at all the options, and I even thought about building a Voron, which I was a few podcasts ago, I was like dead set on building a Voron.
It is very, very ridiculous just how quickly and rapidly you specifically change like anything. It could be any topic. 3D printers, you cycled through like 8 different cars. You've cycled through
it's all about the iteration.
Not a couple different printers, but at least Voron and Prusa.
Well, I'd heard about the Voron for quite a while, and I'd wanted to build one, but I'm like, oh my god, this would be a great casual coders project. When we have more money, we should totally do this. I thought this from almost the beginning. Mm. I really wanted to build a Voron, but the problem is that now that I'm actually have a full-time job, I'm going to school, and I'm doing casual coders.
There is no time
There's
for
no
that.
Time for that. And yeah, I could justify it and say it's a casual coders project. But between the five of us, we could probably build a Voron in a weekend. Frankly, we could.
Frankly, I think we could do that, yeah.
Yeah. But would we want to is the next thing? Would we want to dedicate an entire weekend? And I'm not saying weekend like, a Saturday. This would be a two-day project.
This would be a two-day project.
Yeah, of building a 3D printer, tuning it and everything. I don't think we want to do that.
I think it could be interesting.
And?
I don't know.
The next thing, maintenance. Yeah, the Voron is an amazing machine. The fact that you can 3D print at 250 millimeters per second, like linear speed.
It would be great for casual coders just being the like limited in time that we are.
Dude, imagine how quickly we could get prints done.
Yeah, we could get prints done so fast.
If we put like a 0.6 millimeter Bontech nozzle on it, oh my god.
It'd be a great asset.
It really would be a great asset. And I think in the future, as a casual coder's asset, that'd be great. But this 3D printer would not be a casual coder's asset. This would be my personal 3D printer. And frankly, I don't want to fuck with it. I want to open the thing up.
You
want
a printer?
I want to build it, and I want it to never like have to touch it for like 5 years and it just runs. And frankly, the only company right now that makes that close of a consumer-friendly 3D printer is Prusa. They're expensive, but they work, and they don't stop. Even the cheaper, more consumer-oriented, like the Ender 3s, are not like that.
No.
No, we were having this conversation
earlier. Yeah, I think if we were to get to an Ender 3 level, you're basically going to spend... Like, if you're going to convert your Ender 3 to be close to...
Which I did.
The Prusa.
I have one
You're
that's
going
that
to spend as much as the Prusa costs, if not more, and invest way more time.
If I could...
The only difference is the curve at which you spend the money, right? With the Prusa, it is a square wave. It goes 0, $800. But with the Ender 3, it goes 0, 250, and then 300 and 400 bucks and 500, 600, 700.
That's literally what I did. I spent as much on my Ender 3 as I did on my Prusa, and even now I don't want to touch it anymore because it's still a fucking mess.
Right, and at the end, you end up with a worse product, even though you've invested more money and more time.
Yeah, even if I had just bought the Prusa, I would have had a much better experience with the printer. Now, that being said, Kyle owns 2 Ender 3s.
They're great.
And they are good, like for what a lot of times what we want to do is, but here's the thing, the 3D, I'm getting to the point where the 3D printing that I want to do needs to be millimeter precise.
Yeah, when I have to do that stuff, it really sucks because I'll do like 10 prints sometimes just to get it correct.
I don't want to do that anymore.
I haven't had precision issues with my Ender 3.
Didn't you tune yours though?
I really didn't know.
I've tuned mine so much.
I haven't tried it with my new printer, but my old printer was not.
I know how to tune it. We can tune it if you want at some point.
I tried tuning it. It didn't work very well, but I also was a noob at it, so I could have done it wrong.
Okay. You have to do it like 3 or 4 times to get it really done.
I'm waiting for the Ender 3 to really start dying on me. I might convert it back to Bowden, to be honest. As much of a direct drive enthusiast as I am, I might switch it back to Bowden and just deal with some of that. to pull the weight off of the
The ringing is so bad.
Assembly and try to help with some of the ringing. And I don't know.
The ringing is more noticeable the thicker the layer lines are, too.
Yeah.
So when you're doing 0.6 millimeter nozzles like we like to, it's very noticeable. Which is the next thing is that, like, I want to get the printer, and I'm going to also immediately swap out the nozzle. 0.6 is frankly superior now. You have the software support is so much better. You can get away with doing thin lines prints, and they just look fine.
Yep.
Prusa Slicer even released a new slicing engine that mm-hmm. they're using, which apparently you can activate in Cura. Cura also uses the same slicing engine.
Oh, nice.
Yeah, the one thing about the Prusa is don't you have to use their slicer?
No, you don't. You can use Cura.
Oh, cool.
You can use any slicer
but
you want.
But specifically Prusa Slicer.
Yeah, I thought there was one printer, though, that only lets it use, like, a special sign.
Oh, that's DaVinci. DaVinci's really... There's a DaVinci line of printers as well. And they're
DaVinci Resolve?
No, different company. Unrelated. It's
There are a handful of printers.
Let me go look at what the
new Elegoo SLA printers as well are locked to Chichibox. You're unable to use any other, like, form of...
Oh,
it's
XYZ Printing, sorry. XYZ Printing is the name
XYZ
of the company.
Yeah, XYZ is the
and
company.
DaVinci is their, like, main line printer. And their printers are not that expensive, but...
They're really locked down.
They're really...
You cannot use any form of external filament.
They
have
to
use their own, like, NFC, RFID, like, filament that's, like, you know, locked like HP printer ink is.
You have to use their slicer. It's bad. But apparently they're, like, they're pretty good-ish. Now, MakerBot, dude, those are shit for how much they cost.
The MakerBots are really bad.
Yeah, especially since the ones at school are probably, like, misused and
Akron
disrepair. Didn't
have a handful
of
them?
Oh, no, we had, like, 10.
Yeah.
Which now we have Ender 3s and Prusas, I think.
Do they have?
Yeah, I know they have a few Ender 3s. I know that.
I recall while I was still a student printing a couple of miniatures, and they came out so terrible. Like, D&D tabletop miniatures, they were so bad.
Well, back when I first started at Akron...
I feel like I printed the same miniatures at home with, like, a 0.6 millimeter nozzle, and they came out, like, significantly better even.
So, when I was first getting into 3D printing, which was, like, right before I started college, I really wanted to build a 3D printer for as cheap as possible, because at the time I was working a pizza shop job, and I couldn't justify the extreme expense that a 3D printer normally was. Which is why I ended up buying the Ender 3, so it was relatively affordable. So one of the ideas I had is I was looking around on the RepRap website, which, as you know,
RepRap's an awesome project.
The original
so cool.
3D printer project, effectively.
Yeah. The original home printer project.
Yeah, the original home printer.
I mean, if you really want to go way original, we got to go back to the 1980s 3D printing, with Stratasys.
The current technology of 3D printing, not a lot of people realize this, has been around since the 80s.
It's been around a long time.
And it's just the patent.
Should do a Summoning Salt type video on it.
Do a what?
Have you ever heard of this guy named Summoning Salt?
No.
He does these really good in-depth videos of the history of, like, speed running. So, like, all the high scores in Super Mario, or let's say Mario Kart Wii, for example.
We're going to do a video like that on 3D printing?
Yeah, but on 3D printing, like, the history. Like, first it was this, and then this came out.
Well, there's a patent on it. You weren't allowed to use it.
It'd be interesting. I bet that wouldn't be too terribly difficult. Yeah.
If you guys know the knowledge offhand, at least.
I have it generally offhand. We'd obviously need to do a bit of research.
Yeah, because I don't know who held the patent, but I know that 3D printing as it is today was patented for a long time, and you weren't allowed to do it.
Correct. Actually, FDM is still a trademarked
You can't use thing. You're not supposed to use FDM, it's FFF.
FFF is the open source
fused term. Filament fabrication, not fused deposition modeling.
Correct.
Fused filament fabrication is the open standard.
I don't know if stereolithography is a...
I thought SLA was allowed. I thought SLA was open.
I don't know, because Stratasys also probably has trademarks on SLS as well, selective laser sintering.
Yeah, so SLA, I think, is allowed. MSLA is also allowed, which MSLA is what most
It's what most of your cheap resin printers are, is masked SLA, where they use a UV light being shined up through just a cell phone screen.
Effectively a cell phone screen, yeah.
No, it's just a cell phone screen.
Well, the newer ones are using proper mono.
They're using monochromatic screens. LCDs. They're basically still cell phone screens, but the prior ones, the earlier ones,
were actually cell phone screens. Actually off the shelf, like tablet and cell phone screens.
And they'd shine up a UV light through that, and that would cure your resin. Yeah.
But anyway,
it's cool technology. It's just a mess. It's a pain.
Oh, dude, I'm never getting an SLA printer after you bought one and you hated it. Which, honestly, I take it back. I would get an SLA printer, but there's only one company I would buy it from, and they're super expensive.
Oh, Prusa?
No, I'd get a Form.
Form?
I would get a Form. I would go crazy.
I wouldn't even go that far. I'd go
Prusa,
maybe.
You would just get the
Prusa? Yeah.
Again, Prusa's just so good. Their printers are just that good.
I don't know. Part of me's thinking, like, I don't know, what if I just got the Mercury, like, cure station and whatever? Because I don't have any of the real, like, tools or anything down there. I literally have...
Do you just set your prints in the sun? Like, do you not have a...
No, I have... I made a little coffee box with some, like, UV LEDs inside.
Oh, you made everything. Tin. You didn't get, like, a nice kit or anything.
No, I didn't buy the kit. I bought just the printer.
Because I was thinking about for, like, $400. I think it was Elegoo had a kit. Where you and they also weren't bad. They actually let you use whatever the open standard for MSLA.
Not any longer, I don't think.
This is one of their first ones.
Yeah, where they had some kit where it was
the printer. It was a printer, and then it looked just like the printer, but it was a UV curing station and a wash station.
It's
built
the Mercury.
Into the same. Is it the Mercury?
Cure station, yeah. Yeah,
it was a kit. It came with both. But I'm thinking, yeah, Prusa is just that good. Like, Quentin and Garmin both have Prusa Minis, and they love them. They said it's the best investment they ever made for 3D printing. Garmin loves to make stuff with his. Quentin likes making little knickknacks with his. And, like, both of them had such good experiences with the minis. I think the full-size i3 is going to be a great investment.
It's a good investment. I can guarantee it already. Just
but originally, I was holding out for the XL until I saw the price tag. And I was like, never mind.
Yeah.
How much is the XL?
$3,000.
So what if...
How much larger is XL?
It's huge. No, it's massive. Big. It's like 500 by 500 by 500 millimeters.
So then let's say... I want to have this discussion in person. The big printer...
Would oh, your big 3D printer?
Willing to make a little bit of content and post some of that to an Instagram page.
If you can
or
get it
something.
To function, sure.
It does technically function.
Okay, but straight only is, PLA.
Only PLA, no yeah. heated bed.
No heated bed.
So what if...
Warping is an issue.
Yes. So what if we were to find a way to fund the roughly $125 that it would take to replace the entire linear system with proper linear rail... Open builds V slot with proper Delrin V roller bearings, rework that linear system so that it's actually functional and not a total piece of garbage. And then we could have a casual coder's big printer that does, oh, you know, 750 by 750 by 800 or whatever. Just
something
truly
silly.
Silly, absolutely massive. And then for the heated bed, I was just thinking a heat pad. Cheap heat pad off Amazon, $20 or $30. Just tap.
Modify, it. Get rid of the heat limiting.
Yeah, right. Modify it. That, tap into it, whatever, and just throw it on a relay so it powers off AC mains and just done. Easy enough. Should be an inexpensive enough upgrade. It obviously would need to be proofed out and there's a chance that it could fail, but it's $120 and then casual coders would just have a massive printer that we would be able to
I would actually have use for a big
printer.
Throw
a BL Touch on there and just auto level that bed out.
Well, so I actually wanted a big printer specifically at the time because I wanted to do, I did cosplay stuff. So a big printer would have helped me a lot because I could 3D print like helmets and full helmets and stuff. I wouldn't have to print it in multiple parts like I did with my Star-Lord helmet I built.
If it's it sort of seems like a lot of our projects are increasing in size as well, though.
They are,
so
but
to
at
have
the same
just
time,
a the ability to design, I don't know, we'd be able to print that full keyboard, two of them back to back on
true.
The single bed.
That's
right?
True.
Want
but,
the case for the keyboard project? Done. All in one go.
That's the one project right now that would be the case. Like for our Project Goss that we were discussing.
I bet that we would be able to find a use for it.
I bet we could find a use for it, but Project Goss I think wouldn't be one because we would just print it in sections. Like,
you could
like a
print
real
it in
one
sections,
you would.
But why wouldn't you? If you have the massive printer, right?
I mean,
I
sure,
know.
But
it's also just a,
fragility is an issue.
It
like,
is.
Like structural integrity. Warping. Oh man, that thing probably warps. Like you're gonna have to use rafts if you don't want it to warp.
Without the heated bed at the moment, but yeah. If you can throw the heated bed on there, which is just a heat pad, it should. Probably
are you gonna
be fine.
Find a 1 square meter heat pad to put it on?
There are a handful of options on Amazon.
Okay, if you can find one that's that big that runs off AC mains, blow a breaker at your parents' house.
Yeah, I mean it's not like a proper heated bed. It's literally like a standard.
Well,
like,
no, that's
person
like I've seen a lot of heated bed upgrades are literally just they run off of AC mains and they just have relays in them. My Ender 3 isn't. My Ender 3 is actually a proper 24-volt system, runs through the circuit board, isn't a relay, which means it takes forever to heat up.
But it was a thought, because obviously we need a heated bed.
I know the Prusa
can't print a massive thing, even with a raft or a brim. It just it doesn't work.
Don't know if the Prusas are a 12 or a 24 volt system, but I do know that the Ender 3s were known for having fast heating beds because they were 24 volt systems.
Yep.
I don't know what the Prusa is. I know
I
that,
like how fast the Ender 3's bed heats. It's
I
great.
Know that the CR10 was had the opposite problem because it was only a 12 volt system and it was a big printer. It took forever for the bed to heat.
Yeah.
If it ever got to temperature. Because I've also heard they had issues where basically 60C was your limit. You couldn't go any higher than that.
If we do use a heat pad, 60C is the bed's limit. It's going to be 140.
Well, it's going to be a PLA printer. That's all.
But it's a PLA printer only. Like, yeah. I don't know why you would ever want to try to run like nylon or Zytel. Or
I was not thinking that. I was thinking
PETG.
PETG, yeah. Because that's what I prefer to print with now.
Because the bed is a mirror, we're not being glass. We're not going to be able to.
Yeah, I know. Glass is bad.
Glass is glass and glass breaks.
Yeah, that's the other issue. I'm also thinking if I do end up getting this, I might just say fuck it and also buy the official Prusa enclosure. Because the way their enclosure works is that your actual printer controller goes outside the enclosure. So you can plug in your SD card, dial over to the print you want, hit go, and you never have to go inside the enclosure to like set anything up.
Yeah.
And then it keeps all the fumes out of your room or whatever. But I usually print with PLA and PETG, which don't usually have bad fumes anyway. So yeah,
those are my two common.
Yeah, materials. Those aren't usually an issue. I don't plan on printing with ASA or ABS and nylon. If I'm going to print with that, I already know I'm not going to be stupid. I'm going to print it outside.
Outside.
Yeah. Or not, at the very least in the garage.
I've not dealt with nylon. I've never.
I really wanted to print with nylon because I had some parts that I wanted to build that could have benefited from the durability, but it's such a huge pain to print. That it would
and
not have
store.
Been worth it.
Good
and
luck.
Store, yeah, you have to keep it dry. Even I had issues with keeping PETG dry.
I generally haven't had issues.
Or PLA. I have a dryer now, so I just dry the film before I use it, which it usually works out pretty well.
I need a good dryer.
They're like $30 on Amazon. They're like 100% worth it.
I think they're more like 50 now.
Are they 50 now?
I don't know.
It was an Easun dryer, and it came with a coupon for like $10
off
filament.
Use USB-C?
No, it doesn't. It just plugs into the wall.
It's like a DC barrel check, I'm sure.
Yeah, it is. Let me go find it.
I don't know. But yeah, because otherwise, dryer. With the big printer, I need to try to find some use for it. Obviously, it can't just stay unfinished, taking up basically a whole room forever. Like, it needs to be either a usable 3D printer, or we need to find some other use for the aluminum extrusions, which I gave him two of them to make a sliding camera platform, which hasn't happened yet.
Is this the one to get?
That's one I have.
How much is it?
Is it good? $50?
$50, yeah. It used to be $40. That's when I bought it for him. It's good, yeah. It drives the filament. It has a built-in timer, so you just turn it on, set it, and leave it, and set it and forget it. It's really nice. I quite like it. It's very nice, especially since PLA. PETG isn't as bad as you would think. It's just a hard to print. It's just a stringy material, but it's easier to print with than ABS is. Doesn't warp. It warps still quite a lot.
It should warp less than PLA.
I've had issues with it, but I've also just, again, it's because I had the Ender, dude. I think that. If the average person had all the issues I had with 3D printing, they would not have still kept 3D printing.
Oh, that's absolutely correct.
I had so many issues with my printer. And
that's
fucking
another
tired
one
of
the absolute reasons why I only recommend the Prusa printers. Because if I recommend someone an Ender 3, I just know that I feel like I've seen a fair amount of people in our group at least. Like,
oh, dude,
get
Quentin
an Ender 3
got rid of his because he was having such a problem. So
have so many problems with it and just absolutely hate it. And then, Quentin got the Prusa
and he loves it now.
Loves
he says
it
is beautiful. Once he got the Z leveling down, he said he hasn't had to touch it since and it just goes.
Yeah.
And that's exactly what you want.
Yeah. So I don't recommend the Ender 3s. Prusa all the way.
Prusa all the way. And Ian, if you buy another printer, like you were going to buy a printer, I'm sure you'd buy a Prusa.
I'm not. I don't know. Maybe way down the line. I don't know. The printer bot's probably sort of EOL at this point.
It is. No, it is. I'm sorry, dude. That printer's been EOS since the company went up.
Oh, since the company went under? So since 2016, you're saying?
Yeah, pretty much, yeah. Because you can get your parts for... Well, you can, but they're like not the official parts. They're Chinese knockoff parts.
I can. I don't know.
Which I thought PrinterBot got resurrected by someone.
Brooke Drum is still the CEO.
Does it still exist?
They do. I don't know if they've released anything recently. They had some plans, and then I have no clue where it went. I don't really follow them.
Oh, they have a... Brooke is back, it says. PrinterBot Pro update 2021. So, the PrinterBot Pro limited release USA only. It is a $1,099 printer with a four-color printing design nozzle.
Yeah.
That sounds nuts.
It was sort of nutty. I have no idea whatever happened with it. The PrinterBot Pro, this is the same form factor that it used to be in all those years ago, and I think they probably still use the UBS hot end, which really wasn't super great when I had it. I eventually replaced it with a...
Oh, it was 2018, V6. Not 2016, that went under. was it? It was 2018. Yeah. Hmm. Ceased operations July 18th, 2018. Resumed operations February 2020.
Yeah.
Right before the pandemic hit, they started up again and they got fucked.
Yeah, I don't think they've done well through all
that. No, probably not. Prusa has done fine.
I think the thing that killed them was the weird simple metal like V2 thing that they made, which was 7 inches by 7 inches, but it was a whole lot more money. And it had some weird like cloud-based stuff that was like forcing you to like slice objects in the cloud or something weird. And
for reference, Kyle, I don't know if you, like, you're not as into printers as we are, so you probably don't even know what the Prusa looks like.
Yeah, to me, most 3D printers look very identical, because I don't know what to look for.
It's all cloned based on that.
Yeah, like, actually, this was the original. Like, this is the one that the Ender 3 is based on.
Original Prusa i3 MK3S+.
So what happened was, Joseph Prusa, who founded this company, designed this printer first, and then he released the designs open source, and now every other 3D printer is, like, based on this one.
That's super cool.
Yeah. It's an $800 kit, so we would have to build it, which I would obviously make Casual Coders content out of.
Obviously. Is the 3000 one also what? You need to build?
The what?
The XL.
The XL. Let's go look at the XL if you're interested in it. Why not? Which, I would be interested in it if it wasn't so fucking expensive. Because it's a cool printer. And they also aren't officially out yet. You'd be pre-ordering it. They said it wouldn't get here till November.
Oh, boy.
Yeah, they're not out yet.
Yeah. Who knows? So the
Prusa XL is a large-scale Core XY 3D printer with a build volume of, okay, I was a little wrong, 36 by 36 by 36 centimeters. That's still over a foot on either side. It's still way bigger than an Ender 3. Your reservation is $200. The rest of the price will be charged. So apparently the base model kit with a single extruder head is $2,000. If you want, which apparently you can, it has a tool head changer.
Oh, does it? So they're competing on that level with the E3D tool changer.
Yeah. I don't know if it's a live tool changer, or it might just be like the hot swappable changer. No, it's hot swap. With a zero backlash cyclodial gearbox, hot swappable nozzles, and a load cell based system for fully automatic first layer. What's the difference? I don't know the details on this thing. I'm gonna have to look it up more and talk more about it later.
Do either of you two have any ideas on what to do with the big printer other than like revive it? I don't know if I could sell the aluminum extrusions or something, or I'm just looking for ideas because I don't know. I got to do something with it. It takes up literally an entire room. Dude, and it has for the last
honestly,
5 years.
Honestly, if I were you, we don't. Yes, I understand that having a printer that size would be like very good.
It's cool and it's unique.
It's cool and it's unique, but do you need it to be cool and unique? I think just having a 3D printer is already pretty unique enough. And the fact that we can 3D print that keyboard design that you have at least in two parts and just screw it together is more than enough.
In theory, at least. I'd love to be able to print it as one full chunk.
That would be cool.
I don't know. I'm just struggling to find the motivation to spend extra money on it.
And that's why I'm saying, honestly, dude, if I were you,
I would
yeet the design and turn that into your office. I would yeet it and turn that into an office. That's what I would do.
Yeah.
I wouldn't fuck with it anymore. I don't know. Kyle is very quiet this episode.
Yeah, apparently.
I don't know as much about 3D printers as you guys do. For me, like, I got a printer that apparently Chandler made one time, and then I take my little G-code files, and I put it in, I hit the play button, and then it goes, purr, and then I have a part, and then I'm a happy guy. That's pretty much all I know about printers.
Do you even know, just curious, do you know how to use CAD software? Like, have you ever used CAD before?
Yeah, I use CAD because I was in this, like, it's called my PLTW course when I was in high school, and I learned CAD there.
What specific software did you use?
I used Autodesk Inventor. Initially.
Oh, so the same one as Ian.
And then I learned SolidWorks for a little bit. And then I learned Blender for a little bit. And then I tried a couple of the online tools. I don't remember what they were called, though.
Oh, like Tinkercad?
Yeah, Tinkercad, I think, was one of them.
I don't know. I think Fusion 360.
Tinkercad is the MS Paint of CAD software.
Oh, but yeah. It works.
Apparently, you can. So. Who was telling me? You could design PCBs in Tinkercad now.
That was me. You can do that. Yeah. Yeah, I did that.
Yeah.
Or it's not the PCBs, circuits, and you can export them.
Oh, then, just circuits? I thought it was full PCBs.
No, it's not full PCBs.
Oh,
it's just
never
like,
mind then.
But you can run Arduino simulations on it. So you can actually write Arduino code and like run the Arduino code.
Oh,
in
yeah,
TinkerCAD.
Right. Because they give you like an Arduino and a breadboard. And, yeah.
And then a bunch of components.
Previous podcast, sorry.
So, but like my most complex 3D model is like I modeled like an entire flashlight in Autodesk Inventor, but I've only ever in Tinkercad designed a 3D model and then printed it. So
you've never printed something that you made in Inventor?
Correct.
Oh my god,
like a 3D print flashlight?
Yeah, because I don't own Inventor. I did it at like a school computer and I don't want to pay for it.
That hasn't stopped people before.
Wow,
that's true. But
I mean, when it costs $2,000, right? This just in, breaking news. Casual coders sued by Autodesk. Yeah.
Caught sailing the seven seas. Okay. I was waiting for
visiting
a really
the Pirate
good,
Bay.
I've been waiting to find a really good open source alternative to 3D printing, and it seems like one hasn't really been made yet. So I kind of have been waiting for one of those to be made.
An open source alternative for 3D modeling?
Yeah. That's actually good. You
it's
know?
Called FreeCAD. It's you want to join good. Chandler and I learning FreeCAD 1 week?
I think that's the only option, you know?
Could be a live stream as a struggling to use FreeCAD.
Oh, yeah. Sucks.
Why are the shortcuts different?
Yeah. And
it would just be a complaining festival, but maybe that's what people want to see. Yeah. Get in the comments.
Yeah. At the very end, you'll, or maybe you will, like, afterwards put like a 10-minute like compilation of like the best and worst parts of it and what we learned. Yeah, I don't know.
I successfully made one model in FreeCAD and it was a nightmare the whole time.
I'm pretty sure I made a box.
I didn't make a box. I actually was making I wanted to make a plaque because I heard a funny phrase and I really wanted a 3D printed plaque of it.
I mean, hey, if I switch to Arch Linux, right, I guess that'd be a pretty good push.
You'd have to. Dude, it's the only CAD software on Linux.
Yeah, it's the only Linux CAD
You would
software.
Have to. I mean, technically, there is a... So Fusion 360 actually offers an in-browser version now. And that was how I used to use CAD on Linux, is I would use the in-browser.
Yes, I have a 1480 and a 32-thread CPU. Let me use this in my browser.
Actually, it was surprisingly... not horrible. Anyway,
let me load up 15,000 parts.
WebGL
in my browser.
Works better than you think.
Fair enough, I guess.
Hey, and you can do it 32 times.
Yeah.
Yeah, but anyway,
32 part designing at the same time.
I designed this plaque, it was a line from a sheriff out west, and he said, "Just chill out, drink a 7-Up, eat a moon pie, quit murdering people." And I wanted that as a plaque, because I thought it was funny. And I never ended up printing it, but I made the model.
That's such a good one, to be honest. I don't know. It's just
pie,
a hilarious
drink a
quote.
Up, eat a moon pie. Quit murdering people. He said it in like a southern accent, and I'm like, that's amazing.
Thanks for listening to the Casual Coders Podcast. A lot of weird 3D printer talk and computer talk. These have been some technical episodes back to back, but then again, when isn't it a technical episode? So thanks for watching, and we'll catch you in the next one.
Bye.